Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome into the College Football Game Time podcast. I'm Chris Goforth. This podcast brought to you by ESOG Engineered Solutions of Georgia, proud partners of the Georgia Bulldogs. And that is the topic of our conversation this week here on the College Football Game Time podcast. We're going to welcome in Mike Griffith from Dog Nation. You can find Mike on Twitter at MikeGriffith32. You can also find him Monday mornings when he hops on with John Fricke and Hugh Douglas on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. But Mike, kind enough to give us a few minutes here on the College Football Game Time podcast. Mike, there's a whole lot of stuff to get into. I want to start first with Greg McGarrity announcing his decision that he would be retiring at the end of the year. I don't think for anybody that has followed Georgia athletics, I don't think this news really comes as too much of a shock. You knew it was coming. It was just a matter of when it would come. Josh Brooks is a guy that is on staff at Georgia. He will be the interim athletic director in McGarrity's absence. Brooks is a guy that has a football background. Would you say he's the front runner to be the next athletic director at Georgia?
Yeah, I would. Absolutely. You know, for those, Josh Brooks was a guy that actually started as an equipment manager while he was at LSU and worked under Nick Saban, right? And then a few years later, he's on the associate athletic director at Louisiana Monroe in 2007, a team that beat Nick Saban. You know, these are the kind of things you go, yeah, this is one of those things that's kind of supposed to. Mark Rick brought him here as a director of football ops. He left. He was an athletic director at a couple other schools. He came back. You know, he had a lot to do with the stadium configuration, seating, a lot of the protocol that was in place during COVID-19. A lot to do with the $81 million football building. He's been carrying a lot of weight, doing a lot of duties. You know, I wouldn't call it on the job training, but I do think President Moorhead has seen Josh at work and see how he works with other people. I think it would be really hard for Georgia to hire someone else. Now, certainly there's a lot of sitting athletic directors they'll consider. It's obviously a very popular position. There'll be a lot of interest and Georgia will do their due diligence. They have a very thorough staff. But boy, it would be hard. It would be hard to see someone knocking Josh Brooks out of that when, you know, he's here, things are going well, and there's an interest in stability. And Josh has a good relationship with Kirby Smart, which to me is ultimately a big job requirement for the next AD.
Any idea on when they hope to have things finalized with a permanent person in place?
You know, President Moorhead just said they wanted to work, as quickly as they could, in a time that would enable him to see all the qualified candidates before making a decision. So I don't think they really put a timeline on it. Obviously, Greg's last day is December 31st. Seems to me this is something that you would probably want to get done, you know, I would say in the next couple few months.
Mike, was it a surprise to you that DeJuan Mathis, the word, I guess, came out over the weekend that he was going to leave? I guess it was official on Monday of this week. But are you surprised that he's decided to transfer?
You know, yes and no. I mean, you know, yes. And from the standpoint that, you know, his father really wants him at Georgia, really recognizes the value of the relationship that DeJuan has had with Kirby Smart and his staff, and that, you know, very bizarre and unique circumstance in May of 2019 when he was rushed to Athens Piedmont Regional to have emergency brain surgery. The rehab, the time and effort that DeJuan put in, even through COVID, DeJuan stayed in Athens when all these other kids were going home. He stayed in Athens to train. He really invested a lot into trying to get himself back and compete for the job. And he did have the job. He He started the season as the starting quarterback, and you know, really partially through no fault of his. I mean, you know, Trey Hill was supposed to be this all-SEC center. He was snapping the ball all over the park at the start of that Arkansas game. And, you know, Jermaine Burton's a freshman receiver, runs the wrong route, leads to an interception. I mean, it was – the team was kind of wobbly and shaky coming out of the gate against an Arkansas team that turned out to be a lot better than we thought it would be on the heels of 19 straight SEC losses. And Stetson came in and, you know, was the team steady. And Stetson played well against Auburn. Played well enough against Tennessee, and Georgia actually held a halftime lead at number one Alabama in Tuscaloosa not too long ago, although it seems like a lifetime ago in some respects. And then everything went wrong from the Florida game on. Stetson got injured when on that go-ahead touchdown, 14-0, 3.5 minutes in. Georgia's up 2 touchdowns on the Gators, but Stetson takes a shot to the shoulder, and Dwan comes in, and for one series, Stetson gets a shot, goes back out there, you know, just couldn't hit the broad side of the barn, you know, 4 or 5 deep passes that they hit him. I mean, it's a different game. And Dwan plays the last 25 minutes and, you know, gets a touchdown, and but 2 interceptions. You know, he's playing from, you know, 41-21 down. And so those were his 2 opportunities. And then JT gets the opportunity and throws for 400 yards and the writing's on the wall. And, you know, Dwan basically made the determination that, hey, I don't want to stick around as a backup quarterback for another year at Georgia. You know, I've put in 2 years here. I've worked hard, you know, go somewhere else where maybe you can play right away. And the amazing thing, Chris, is, you know, he's still got 4 years of eligibility left because this year doesn't count.
Any idea on where a good landing spot for him might be?
Well, a good landing spot and a probable landing spot are 2 different things, in my opinion. You know, I would have liked to have seen Dwan stay and play receiver for a year because I think that's where he'll ultimately end up. You know, when you're 6'6", 215, run a 10-800 with a 40-inch vertical, I mean, that's Randy Moss, you know. And you've got an understanding of the defense because you've played quarterback. You know, whereas Dwan's quarterback skills are such at this time that I think it will probably – if he goes to a Power 5 school, I don't think he gets on the field right away. I don't know what they're telling him. But, you know, he needs polish and he needs to get consistent throwing the ball. He needs reps. He needs work. And, you know, remember, the kid didn't have spring drills, really hadn't played any game in almost 2 years. You know, you think about it. So he's going to need work wherever he goes at a Power 5. And you kind of wonder what happens in that year, year and a half versus, you know, like if he'd go to a MAC school like a Toledo, a Ball State, a Bowling Green. I think he's the guy, Eastern Michigan. And I think they work with him. And I think he gets 3 or 4 solid years of being the guy. Whereas at a Power 5, we all know how it works. You know, they recruit over you, they recruit around you, and your job is really never safe.
You kind of referenced Georgia and the emergence of JT Daniels at quarterback. They've been really, really good offensively the last 2 weeks, at least from a numbers standpoint. How much of that do you attribute to Georgia? How much of that is the competition they faced?
Well, it's a lot of Georgia. I mean, it's JT being able to fly the jet. You know, it's not easy to fly the jet, you know. You know, these kids come in and, you know, you're going to a pro style offense, and you know, I say pro style and everybody goes, what are you talking about? I play Madden. I can play pro style. No, you don't understand. You got to play clock. You got to call protections. You got to make reads. You got to make the same read as your receiver. They've got option routes. You know, you got to know what everybody on the field's doing. You got to speak the coordinator's language. You got to be able to execute. You got to be able to check. You got to get through your progressions. I mean, there is a lot. And, you know, that's why Justin Fields looked like a deer in the headlights his freshman year. Everybody's like, oh, what's the deal? You know, why does he look so much better at Ohio State? Well, 2 things. One, he's a sophomore, not a true freshman anymore. So he's played a year of college football and he understands the expectations and what it takes as far as investing time to work. But 2, it's a much simpler offense. It's a very simple read offense when you run that version of the spread versus a pro style, which is predicated on trying to make the correct play call based on what the other defense is in. So you got to go to the offensive line, almost playing 3-dimensional chess here. You know, I know what you want me to think, but I know what I think. And I know if I think this, then I'm supposed to do that. But if you think I'm going to do that, I'm going to do this. I mean, there's a lot to it. And oh, by the way, that play clock's ticking along, right? So it's complex. The advantage is with the right quarterback, an experienced Jake Fromm, a JT Daniel, you know, Trevor Lawrence. These are guys that can put their team in the right play on every snap. They're not stuck with that play call. You know, you see the quarterback clap his hands and they look what the defense is doing. Then he looks to the sideline for the play. Then he calls the play. Well, guess what? The defense can make a change too. But when it's a quarterback who goes up there in a pro style, if he's already got the right play, they just go. If he doesn't, he changes it and you don't know what he's just changed to. So big advantage to pro style when you've got somebody that can run it.
You sound like you're sold on JT Daniels. What kept him off the field early in the year?
The knee, he had that heavy knee brace on and Kirby said it best, just because you're cleared doesn't mean you're ready to play. Like, you can be medically cleared but not be ready to play. I mean, you got to have a lot of confidence. It's hard. And I think we could probably all remember, us older guys can remember when we realized we were mortals. And my leg really can break, somebody really can knock me down with one punch. But for a lot of these young guys that are playing college football, that's never really happened. They've always been the guy on top of the heap. They've never been the guy knocked down. They've never had the guy with the broken bone. They certainly were never the guy that was picked last for a football team. But when you're injured, you're dead man walking, you're not any good to the unit. And you kind of go through a mental crisis of, so who am I? If there's no football, what am I? And JT Daniels, even more so, so here's a kid who was USC starting quarterback, started 2019, and suffers that ACL, sits back and watches another freshman come in and tear it up and grow very close to the offensive coordinator, to the extent that they said, this would probably be pretty sticky if we wanted to come back and compete. And now Graham Harrell has this great relationship with Keaton Slovis. No offense, but hey, y'all just do you, because we really think that it would be very hard for JT to, if you got two quarterbacks, you don't have one, right? So they had to really kind of search out where they wanted to go. And when JT was in the portal, Todd Monken was talking to him, which, for all those people that wonder what happened to Jamie Newman, that's pretty much the red flag that something's wrong here, because JT Newman had been on campus for 5 months and the offensive coordinator is talking to JT Daniels in the portal, which tells you he doesn't have much faith that Jamie Newman, a graduate senior, by the way, can come in and learn a pro style offense without the benefit of spring. Just for those that, you need to understand, I mean, here's a guy who's played college football 4 years and he's having issues with the pro style offense. It's not easy. Carson Beck, state champion in Florida's largest classification, true freshman, he's not on the field this year. It's a difficult thing to grasp. So Daniels hits it off with Monken, comes to Georgia, and Newman, after one scrimmage, he's gone. I don't think that's a coincidence. A scrimmage doesn't go well, probably gets, takes a shot on the depth chart. Hasta la vista, him and Kirby meet, it doesn't have to be bad. We're glad you came. Coach, thanks for the opportunity. Let's just shake hands and everybody walks away clean. And Jamie Newman goes and trains for the Senior Bowl. We'll get to see him in Mobile here in another couple months or so. And we think JT Daniels is going to be the guy, right? But then the knee doesn't get cleared in time for the opener. So Kirby's got to get the guys ready that can play. And a funny thing happens on the way to Florida, and that Stetson Bennett, performs well enough that Kirby Smart starts thinking, this guy's got mobility. The team believes in him. And I think, they kind of thought, hey, he could be the guy. And in the meantime, JT's coming along with the mobility, but is he really far enough along? It wasn't until JT went to Kirby's office the day after the Florida game and basically said, Coach, I can do this. I can do. And maybe that's what Kirby was waiting for. Like, he needed to hear it from the kid. He'd taken the knee brace off before the Tennessee game. And that's a sign. But for that guy to be so competitive and so confident to come and knock on his door and say, I'm ready. Okay, you say you're ready, I believe you're ready. And so that's where we're at.
Do you expect him back in Athens next year?
Yeah, I do. I do. I do, because I look around the team and I see an offense that, and this is where all the Georgia fans say, stop, Mike, don't say it. Don't say next year. We're so tired of wait till next year. Hey, listen, that's all we can say, because this year the ship has sailed. But, you look out there and you see a guy like George Pickens, and an NFL first round receiver. You see a guy like, Jermaine and, Burton, a guy that, had like Odell Beckham Jr. combine number. I mean, the kid's a freak. He's not OBJ yet, but you look at his numbers and he's fast and he runs and he jumps. And you saw 197 yards 2 weeks ago. I mean, that just doesn't happen out of nowhere. You see a guy like Kyaris Jackson, that's emerged from the injuries. And I think Kyaris is an NFL player. Every bit as good as Riley Ridley, in my opinion, who, if Riley can get drafted, Kyaris Jackson certainly can. He's a tough kid. You see this Darnell Washington, this 6'7", 265 freshman tight end. I mean, you know, Kyle Pitts has certainly raised the bar high, but this is a big physical specimen who can run, who's coming back. You know, you look in the backfield. You see Kenny McIntosh, and I don't know if you saw that 32-yard run, but that was NFL vision you saw with the cuts that he made and the way he's able to plant and stick and move, able to catch the ball fluidly. You see Kendall Milton, who has, you know, just, you know, undeniable power. He's out right now with a strained MCL, but, you know, the Tennessee game, they literally took 9 guys to tackle. I mean, this guy, Milton, looks like he's in the mold of the greats. That Georgia's had. You know, Zamir White, not so much. You know, the kid's come off 2 knees. He's had 1 explosive run in 2 years. A hardworking guy, a great story, but just doesn't quite have that next level look like we see in so many other backs. Cook, a little inconsistent. Saw some good things the last game. Not really sure what he's going to do with the future. So you talk about that kind of supporting cast for JT, a chance to play a full season. You know, look, JT is a guy that was the national freshman of the year, according to Max Preps. Then he was the national high school sophomore year, according to Max Preps. And then his junior year, he was the national Gatorade player of the year. And then when he should have been a senior, he was a freshman at USC, only the second ever true freshman to start for the Trojans. And he was throwing for 347 on Notre Dame and over 300 on a Texas team that would beat Georgia. So this is a guy who's never met a challenge or a battle that he hasn't won, you know, and now that he's overcome this knee, I think he wants to stay at Georgia and have a pretty special year. I think he does it this time.
Has Kirby Smart had a change in philosophies when it comes to his offense?
You know, that's a $1 million question. Well, it's actually a $6 million question. I think that's what he makes. It's, you know, watching the South Carolina game. No, but we have to wonder if it's not Mike Bobo on the other sideline, former Georgia quarterback, former Kirby Smart teammate. Does Kirby let the air out of the ball if it's not Mike Bobo? You know, Kirby will tell you, hey, you know, he's working his 5, you know, young linemen, his running game. You know, but, you know, you got George Pickens over there, and you only threw to him 4 times tonight. You know, I'm not saying George is going to squirt Kirby with the water bottle, but, you know, when you got these kind of receivers, you know, they want the ball, right? That's part of having them. You know, if you're going to recruit these kind of guys, I mean, you got to use them, right? That's why they came to Georgia. Otherwise, they'd go to Florida or Alabama. You know, somebody said, you know, hey, but they had their offensive explosion the week before. He was 28 of 38 for 4-1. I said, that's not an explosion. That's another day at the office at Florida or for Alabama or for Clemson. I mean, that's the norm, 28 for 38 for 401. That's not the outlier. And Georgia needs to get to the point, if this offense is going to evolve, you know, that's why you hired Todd Munkin 2 years ago. He's leading the Tampa Bay Buccaneers to the number one passing offense in the NFL. And you know, now, you know, this year, Munkin has coached a former 4-string walk-on and just coached a game where there was 10 to 16 passing for 139. I mean, he had quarterbacks do that in one quarter in the NFL. So, you know, I think he needs to. I think that's why you hire Todd Munkin. I think that's why you recruit George Pickens and Jermaine Burton. I think that's why JT Daniels transferred here. And I think Kirby recognizes that he needs to be very efficient in the passing game to compete for championships.
JT Daniels has been sacked 4 times the last 2 games. You mentioned a second ago about Kirby trying to work with that young offensive line last week. Is that a concern, the number of sacks?
No, not really, because it's just JT learning that he's got to give up on plays once in a while. You know, you're seeing a kid that hadn't played a full game in 2 years, and, you know, he wants every play to be a touchdown. It's a California mentality. I've covered these California quarterbacks. They think big, okay? If you give them single coverage on their favorite receiver, they don't care if it's 3rd and 1. They're going to throw it 60 yards on you, down your throat. And JT has that aggressive mentality. And, you know, he's a guy that doesn't want to give up on plays. He wants to hold the ball. He wants to stay in the pocket. He wants to wait for his receiver to come open. You know, and what you need to know in the SEC is when these guys hit you here, sometimes you stay down. You know, a couple of years ago, I think there was only 4 out of the 14 starting quarterbacks that made it through a season. So, you know, much rather throw that incomplete and get rid of it, live to play another play, punt, rather than risk taking the hit where you can do yourself harm or put yourself in 10 or 12 yard loss. So that's just an adjustment to the philosophy and the speed of the SEC. And I think we saw him make it in real time. Those sacks were in the first half. Kirby talked to him about halftime. You saw JT throw some balls away in the second half. I think you'll see more of that moving forward.
I want to switch sides of the ball with you now for a minute. Give me a grade on the Georgia defense up till this point in the season. How would you grade them?
Well, it depends on whether we're grading on a curve, or if we're grading on the Georgia curve, if we're grading on the Georgia championship curve. If last year was an A-, this year's been a C+. You know, compared to the rest of the defenses in the SEC, there's still an A- or a B+, though. I mean, they still lead the SEC in scoring defenses. As bad as it's been, this is still the number one run defense in the league, and one of the top five run defenses in the country. But relative to where they were, it's been a disappointing season. You know, the marquee games against Alabama and Florida didn't go the way you thought, or the way Kirby thought. You know, you give up 564 yards to Alabama when you're at full strength. You give up 571 to Florida when you're missing, you know, your All-American safety and your NFL nose tackle, a depleted team for the most part after the Kentucky game. So, but, you know, you wonder, you know, how much teams have done their kind of homework on Georgia. You know, they're kind of finding the soft spots against Kirby's scheme. You know, they're not just watching tape about, you know, they're really studying what Georgia's doing. And they're kind of exploiting. And so now it's going to be up to Kirby and Dan Lanning and Glenn Schumann to kind of evolve and say, okay, where do we go from here? Where do we take this from here? It's time to change, right? You're starting to face more of these spread teams. I think Kirby's got some good concepts. I think they coach these guys up really well. The NFL draft will tell you that. But they'll be in a little bit of a reload next year. And so you're going to have to rely on that offense to do big things next season.
When do we see Richard LeCount back on the field?
You know, that's a great question. You know, the motorcycle accident on Halloween night, unregistered dirt bike on the highway. I mean, that's tough, man. That's a tough deal there. Everybody thankful that he's alive. He was unconscious at the scene, transported by ambulance. You know, it was a bad scene. And I think everyone's happy Richie's healthy or getting healthy. You know, Kirby wouldn't speculate on this weekend. This is a senior game. I just don't know. I don't know the extent of the injuries, internal, external, broken bones. And then beyond that, I wonder, I mean, is he going to be healthy enough to run for the combine? And if he's not, is there an outside shot Richie LeCount's back next year? I mean, I don't know. Nobody said that to me, but, you know, this was a guy that was expected to go in the second or the third round. And now you kind of got to wonder, you know, did this hurt? How much did it hurt his draft stock? And if it hurt his draft stock enough, does he come back for another year? Because this year doesn't count on anybody's eligibility clock.
Mike, you mentioned a minute ago how good Georgia has been defensively this year against the run, especially in the SEC. How much they have also struggled, though, against the pass at times, especially against what I would consider at least to be elite passing teams. There's a lot of talent, even without Richard LeCount in that secondary. There's a lot of talent back there. What's been the disconnect with this Georgia defense, and in particular in the secondary?
Inability to get pressure, you know, You got to get heat on these guys. You saw it first play of the Alabama game. They hit Mac Jones and it's an interception, right? You got to get to the, you get Kyle Trask off platform and you know, I don't want to say average or normal, but he's not the guy that he is when he has time to throw. I mean, you get Kyle Trask rolling out and scrambling. I mean, you know, the guy had 7 points going into halftime at Kentucky before a punt return. I mean, you've got to get pressure. Number one. Number two, you've got to stay on the field. You got to be able to run the ball and consume time. I mean, the whole key to the Florida game, you know, last year, Florida had 9 possessions in that game against Georgia. This year, they had 9 in the first half alone. You know, you had 4 out of 5 series after those 2 scoring drives, 4 out of the next 5 series, you were 3 and out. You keep putting Kyle Trask back out there and he's just playing pop a shot. You're not getting any pressure. He's getting his timing. He's getting his rhythm. You know, you got to keep those teams off the field, number one. Number two, you got to put pressure. I don't care how good your secondary is. If you give those guys time to throw and they're throwing to targets like Kyle Pitts or like a Devontae Smith, they're going to hit them. It's just a matter of time. So the problem was the offensive lines for Florida and Alabama proved superior to Georgia's fronts and pressures.
Mike, I appreciate you giving us some time. I've been reading your work for a long time, going back to when you were the beat writer covering Tennessee. So I appreciate you giving us some time. And with that being said, I want to get your thoughts on a couple of things going on around the conference now. South Carolina job is open. The Vanderbilt job is open. Do you see another job coming open in the SEC?
You know, you and I both know, and I think fans know, that when you're dealing with boosters – that are over the $100 million mark, it's just a matter of them picking up the phone and deciding, you know, that it's time for a change. You know, we look at it and we go, oh my gosh, this guy's buyout is $6 million or $12 million or $20 million. it's a phone call for somebody. You know, I'm not saying they take it that lightly. It's just they love their schools, okay? And they have the resources to make a change, right? Like, you know, you look at your house and, you know, do you need a new fence? Do you really want to spend $4,000 to put a fence around your house? Well, if it gets bad enough, you will, because you got to see the thing every day and it matters to you, right? And how secure is it? Maybe your dog gets out of the yard. Kind of a crazy analogy. But, you know, speaking of dogs, Smokey's got a big game Saturday. It's supposed to be cold. Yeah. Got the Gators coming in. I'll say this. I was just texting with Philip Fulmer a moment ago. And I said, Coach, I don't know if you remember the last time that a Florida-Tennessee game was rescheduled for the month of December.
2001.
It was 2001, and Tennessee was a 17.5 point underdog. You know what the line is for this game?
17.5.
And a rescheduled game in December between Tennessee and Florida. Now, I'm not calling it upset. I do think, though, that the formula, Kentucky showed everybody the formula. You've got to run the ball, and you can't give up the big plays. And Tennessee does have a decent run game. And if the weather is cold, those guys from Florida are down in Florida for a reason, okay? They ain't in Gainesville because they like cold weather. But if it really does snow in Knoxville, I would say the stage is set for a game to keep an eye on. I'm not going to say they can beat Kyle Trask in Florida, but they've had an extra week to prepare. And this is kind of a, you know, all eggs in one basket. Let's face it, I mean, this is Tennessee season. Doesn't matter what bowl game they go. If they beat Florida, they can walk away from this season feeling good about it, because Jeremy Pruitt has yet to beat, you know, any of his major rivals. And Tennessee coaches get judged on what they do against Georgia, Florida, and Alabama. And right now, Jeremy's sitting here 0-8 in year three with an opportunity to play Florida on Saturday. So that's a game to watch. Could he get fired? Possible. You know, every time you pull into Pilot Gas Station and pump that gas, you're putting money in the volunteers' pockets. Great. The Haslam family is a great family. You're also supporting children's hospitals and charities, and they do all sorts of good things with their money. But they have the resource at Tennessee to make it. The question would be, though, Chris, is what would be the change? Who would you get? If you have, and the reason Philip Fulmer, I'm going to tell you a quick sidebar story that not many people know. It's pretty fascinating. When Philip Fulmer was fired, people were like, oh, God, here comes the history lesson. When Philip Fulmer was hired, was fired with games remaining in the 2008 season, the Haslam family owned part of the Pittsburgh Steelers. And they had a working relationship with Bill Cowher. And they thought that Bill Cowher was going to take that job. And his daughter, who was a Division I basketball prospect, would come and play for Pat Summitt. That was why they made the move to fire Philip Fulmer with games remaining. We didn't have an early signing date back then like we do now. Now you're seeing guys fired with 3 and 4 games left because they want to make sure they got that new coach in place for that December 15th or 16th signing day and you don't fall behind on the recruiting trail, right? But back then they didn't have that. So it was very curious. Why would you fire a guy like Philip Fulmer less than a year removed from the SEC championship game unless you thought you had something special? And they thought they had Bill Cowher. Cowher backs out. Holy cow. Now what are you going to do? Well, that's when the Kiffin concept came into play. Not only were you getting Lane Kiffin, but you were getting Monty Kiffin.
Right.
And the thought was you get the father and the son. And yeah, the son, he's got a little bit of a personality, and Al Davis and him don't say it either. But you got Monty Kiffin, and everybody speaks well about Monty. And then that staff had Ed Orgeron, Eddie Gran. I mean, it was kind of a who's who of aggressive, crazy guys. Lance, what was it? Former defensive line coach at Alabama. Lance slips my mind, but he's a very, very aggressive recruiter. And but that's the story of why that happened. So to get back to the question you were asking me of who gets fired, the question is, does the program think that they can get Hugh Freeze hired? And if they think they can get Hugh Freeze hired and get the thumbs up from the SEC commissioner who represents the schools, then maybe you're more apt to make that move.
Mike, I could go on all night. I do have one final thing for you here before I let you go, because again, you've been around this conference a long time. Can you explain in what little bit of time we have left what Vanderbilt does with that $44 million check they get from the SEC every year? Because they sure as heck aren't putting it back into football.
They got a great medical center. They got a great academic school. They really do. I mean, it's an incredible you know, you think about it, and, you know, the thing that kind of I don't know if burns me up is the right word. I like the SEC. You know, everybody, oh, you know, you're a homer. Well, I'm a homer for who? I mean, I've covered four, you know, seven schools and four conferences in 30 years. So you're going to have to tell me who I'm a homer for first. But I like the whole SEC. You know, I like all the flavors. I'm the guy in the buffet line that's I'm putting everything on my plate, you know. And I like me some Vandy. I like the underdog. I'm an underdog guy. I liked Derek Mason a lot. I think he's a first-class person. I mean, it's a guy that beat Kirby Smart in 2016, okay? This is a guy that went 3-3 against Tennessee. And it wasn't so long ago that James Franklin had the Commodores in the top 25 with Jordan Rodgers, who I think is a rising star on the SEC network, playing quarterback. And so you got it going. You beat Tennessee 5 out of 7 years, which I would have never dreamed could happen in my lifetime. It's not Georgia Tech in Georgia. It's Savannah State in Georgia in terms of the resource. It's just an incredible feat for them to beat Tennessee 5 out of 7 years. The Nashville skyline is booming. There is literally more cranes in the city of Nashville than any city in North America because of the growth and the money going into that city. It looks like it would be the perfect formula for Vanderbilt to get a foothold and invest in some facilities and decide they want to join the ranks of the big boys and sit at the grown-ups table, right, at Thanksgiving. And they took a hard pass on it. And, you know, so it doesn't really matter who you hire if you don't have the facilities or the investment in your resources. And, you know, we see that in baseball with different teams having different salary caps, for example. It's not impossible. You know, now you're talking about, well, maybe they need to run a gimmick offense. You know, maybe they need to go back to the triple option. You know, Jerry DiNardo had some success there with the eye bone, which, of course, Colorado ran in 1990, ironically enough, splitting a national championship with Georgia Tech, which would run the triple option and use their gimmick offense to be a headache for some teams in their conference and for Georgia once a year. So to me, there's a cap to that. I think Georgia Tech showed that. You can win, but you can only win so much. You're only going to be able to recruit so many types of kids, certainly not those that are planning on going to the NFL until they start running the triple option in the NFL, which you won't see because they want points and points equal ratings. So it's a tough situation. I don't know where the money goes. It doesn't go into – I'm with you. Look, if you want to be a part of the SEC – you know, you should have SEC facilities and you should recruit SEC, you know, I feel bad for the Vanderbilt kids. I try not to pile on, but I get frustrated just like you do. It sounds like that Vanderbilt doesn't do more with their resources.
Mike, I appreciate it, man. I hope you'll come back on again, because again, there's a lot more we could get into going around this conference and certainly with Georgia football. So I appreciate you giving us time. And again, I want to do this again before too much longer.
You got it. Everybody stay safe out there. Thank you.
That's going to do it for us this week here on the College Football Game Time podcast, brought to you by ESOG Engineered Solutions of Georgia, proud partners of the Georgia Bulldogs. Invite you to join myself, John Chuckery, Randy McMichael, Saturday morning, 9 to noon, College Football Game Time. We're talking about all the games from across the country, 9 to noon on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Until then, hopefully you can join us again next week here on the College Football Game Time podcast. Have a great week.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.